Looking at the next model in our series on model leadership for pastors, and this model is called the efficient administrator. I want you to imagine a man with a file. Here's my first question. Does your desk glorify God? Can you glorify God in your administration? These are the questions we'll be addressing in this lecture that deals with the problem of paper or data. Some pastors seem to think that the power of the gospel stops at their office door. I want to show you that there is no area of life we can say to God, no entry. If you look at the PDF of the notes, I linked to an interview that Matt Perman of Desiring God gave to Christianity Today. And he, in that interview, argues that administration is part of the good works we do to glorify God. And I agree with him. So let me approach this subject. First of all, I want to talk briefly about the beauty of organization. We're used to thinking about mountains or lakes or Apple Macs when we think about beauty, but not about administration. But I believe orderly administration is beautiful because it portrays the image of God, Genesis 1:27, obeys the mandate of God, Genesis 1:28, gives pleasure to God, Genesis 1:31, and it reflects the nature of God, 1 Corinthians 14:33 and 40. And sin, by way of contrast, is anomos, lawlessness, disorder, and chaos. So think first of all of the beauty of organization. Secondly, the benefits of organization. Efficient organization is not only beautiful, it's also beneficial. Available time increases as we spend less and less time looking for things. Matt Perman quotes to do, doing, done. He says, clutter sucks creativity and energy from your brain. Clutter sucks creativity and energy from your brain. Our peace increases with organization because we're not always worrying if we miss something. We enjoy our work a lot more. And the effectiveness of our witness also increases because if we fail to answer correspondence or keep appointments, we lose credibility and people's confidence. You might say that the cultural mandate, rule and be fruitful, begins with our offices, our studies. Again, a link in the lecture notes to a great series on how to set up your desk by Matt Perman. So, organization's beautiful, organization's beneficial. Thirdly, I want to look at the barriers to organization. As we would expect in this fallen world, anything beautiful or beneficial is not going to come easily. There are a number of obstacles to organization, not least of which are our own sinful hearts. Let's think of that first of all, our sinful hearts. Some people enjoy portraying themselves as kings of their chaos. The monotonous drudgery of organizing puts some off, while others claim that a clean space would spoil their creativity. We do get attached to our things and resist getting rid of them. It may be trash, but it's my trash. Secondly, the sins of others. Maybe we're married to chaotic people. We cannot get them to cooperate. Perhaps we've been given an impossible workload that prevents us ever doing anything well. The third barrier are changes. Sometimes we feel that we just get settled into a good routine when the next change comes along and all the balls we've been juggling fall to the floor again. Whenever we change computers or have to get used to new software, our organizing is going to take a backward step, and any change in study or living location is obviously going to engulf our studies as well. Fourth barrier is storage. Sometimes our problem is simply that we don't have enough storage space, or it's not close enough for us to use it. Others, however, set up such a complex storage system that it just puts them off using it. We also need simple storage solutions for electronic information. So, just some barriers to getting organized: our own sinful hearts and tendencies, the sins of others, changes, storage problems. So, let me give you a blueprint for organization. I'm going to deal firstly with personal administration and then more briefly with church administration. So, personal administration. Whenever you come across a piece of paper, you should try Bill Lawrence's Trash. Bill Lawrence wrote Effective Pastoring, and he outlines his trash system of administration on page 131 and following. And his system also works for the computer, which should be really viewed as just like a cluttered and overstuffed filing cabinet with a mailbox. On the note, I've linked to one of his posts on nesters, desktoppers, and searchers, where he outlines the main approaches to computer filing systems. So let's go through his trash system. The first one, T, is throw it away. The first question we should ask when we come across paper or a file is, can I throw it away? And if so, do I need to shred it? R is for reroute it. Does this piece of paper belong on my desk or in my computer? Should someone else have it? A is act on it. Options for action include do it, whether it's answer an email, make a phone call, order the book. Put it on a to-do list, do today, do this week, or do eventually. Enter it in your diary, and remember to check your diary every day and sync it with your wife and family. Or enter in accounts if it's a monetary financial item. I use mint.com for my accounting. It's a free online banking administration system. So T, throw away. R, reroute it. A, act on it. S, save it. If you're not going to throw it away, and you're not going to reroute it, and you're not going to act on it, then save it. File it in a place you can retrieve it from. And that might be a correspondence tray, might be a nearby filing cabinet, might be a reading pile. It might be electronic filing. I use Evernote for documents, especially PDFs, and scanned images. I use Digo, Digo. Look at digo.com. I use that to order my the websites and blogs that I've found helpful. You know the problem, you may want to look for an article on preaching Christ from the Old Testament, so you go to Google and it produces 5 million results, and you're just trying to find the article you read 6 months ago that you know would be a big help to you. So what this basically does is, when you come across these helpful articles, you bookmark them in Digo, and then when you go to search for it, you go to the Digo website, you under your own username, and you put in Christ in the Old Testament, and up it will come. So basically, it's your own mini Google. It's a way to search what you've already found useful, rather than casting yourself at the mercy of Google. So Digo for websites, and I use Dropbox, all one word, Dropbox, for backing up my documents. It does it automatically in the background, saves old copies, old versions of your files, and all of these you can get for free at a basic level, which is often sufficient for pastors. So throw it away, reroute it, act on it, save it, and the H is halt it. Stop the sender sending it to you. Stop the junk. Stop the periodical you never read. Stop the email newsletters you never read. Just stop it. filling up your space and your computer. So that's his basic personal admin system, trash. And some of that is applicable to email as well. But let me add a few extra suggestions for efficient use of email. It's one of the biggest distractors and time consumers for pastors. Here's the first one. Don't keep your email turned on. In fact, if you follow Julie Morgenstern, she says, don't check your email in the morning at all. Get all your big things done first before you turn on your email. But don't keep it turned on either, or you just keep responding to every email that comes in. You can use filters to pre-sort incoming mail, so that if you get, for example, you're going to get a few email newsletters every day, you can so use, say, Gmail to tell it whenever that comes into your inbox, it immediately goes into a file, so that it just gets out of your inbox, and when you want to read these things, you can find the file, that you can find the tag and go and do it. So use filters to pre-sort incoming mail. Process every 2 to 3 hours. In other words, don't keep it turned on, but turn it on maybe every 2 to 3 hours and process it. Matt Perman again argues that the less you check, the less you'll get. You can look at his article, Grasshoppers and Email. Again, there's a link in the notes. This is quite a common set of words that you'll find in most admin books, leadership books dealing with email. Number one, do. If you can answer it in under 2 minutes, do it. So if you get an email, you think, oh, I can quickly answer that in under 2 minutes and just get it done. Secondly, delegate. You get an email, you think, somebody else would be better to answer that. Just send it on, forward it, delegate it. Defer. Decide to deal with it later in the week, or just when you have the time. And actually, the longer you delay, the less email you'll get, and the lower people's expectations will be. If you just keep, every single email that comes in, no matter how big or small or demanding, you just keep replying, then that's what people get to expect. And that just puts you under huge pressure eventually to just always be at that sort of level of performance. So obviously you don't want to delay it and delay it and delay it until people get annoyed, but there's an element of deferral which is vital to managing email. So you've got do, if you can do it in under 2 minutes, delegate it, offload as much as possible, defer it, decide to deal with it later. You might have a file, a folder in your email system that is called maybe answer later or answer in 1 week. So it just gets things out of your inbox into these files, and you get a system for either every day doing the more than 2 minutes answers or every week doing more substantial answers. The fourth D there is delete. Don't just keep things for the sake of it. And lastly, file. And it's much better, I think, to use a tag system rather than a file system. Then set yourself time targets when dealing with email. Say, for example, right, I'm going to take no more than 30 minutes to do this. So you get a stopwatch there, get it started and get going and really force yourself, right, it doesn't matter how many I answer or how few I answer, I'm doing this for no more than 30 minutes, and it's amazing how much you can get through if you really focus and learn how to type fast, keep your answers to a minimum. People don't expect long epistles, lots of greetings and best wishes, etc. in an email. Keep answers to a minimum, short, one sentence replies if possible. If you're asking questions, getting people to do things, then number your points. That really does improve your chances of getting direct answers to questions or direct action on requests. And just take the time to do a spell check before you send. It just takes but 5 seconds and can greatly help your credibility. So don't keep your email turned on. Use filters to pre-sort incoming mail. Process every 2 to 3 hours. In that processing, you do it, you delegate it, you defer it, you delete it, or you file it. Set yourself time targets, learn how to type fast, keep your answers to a minimum, number your points, and spell check. Now, when I was pastoring, I used to also carry with me five small index cards. People to visit, so that, like if I was at church and I heard somebody was sick, then I'd add their name to the list. If I was out visiting and somebody said, oh, so and so is not well, so and so needs a visit, I'd add their name to that card. I just didn't rely on my memory. Second card was questions to ask. Delegated tasks, follow-ups, door conversations. So, for example, I'm going to church. I'm thinking, oh, I've got to remember to ask that deacon if he sent that check. Got to make sure if that elder did actually visit that home. I also kept that card with me at, say, the church door when I was greeting people and saying cheerio to people. People would drop things into conversations. Just to have a card that. Oh, right, hold on, I'm just take a note of that. So that'd be my second card. It was a sort of gathering card for questions I have to ask, tasks I have to delegate, following up on things I've asked to be done, door conversations, checking out how people were. So that's the second card. People to visit is the first one. Questions, etc. is the second. Intimations and announcements or notices. So that if I'm going to church, I have in one place all the notices I have to give. And then I also actually kept a card with sermon ideas on it, so that wherever I was, sermon idea came into my mind, I would have a card to put that on. And my fifth card was a to-do list. And actually, I usually had on one side of that card my daily to-dos, and on the other side, weekly to-dos. And if you check my blog at Head Heart Hand, you'll maybe make a search under a productivity tag, or you can look up my I'll never get to it list. I think that's the title of the blog. But there, that article really emphasizes the importance of not just having a to-do list saying what you will do, but when you will do it and where you will do it. So that you don't just have intentions but actions. So that you're not just get this pile, this long list of things to do, but you're actually scheduling it, and you have a much higher chance of getting your to-dos done if you actually say, and I'm going to do it here, and I'm going to do it then. Let me briefly deal with church administration. I would recommend the Leadership Handbook of Management and Administration. You'll get a lot more material in this, and really, in many ways, if you're having to deal with church administration as a pastor, there's a problem, because that's what deacons were provided for. And I hope you will all end up at churches with good deacons who have all the administration up and running smoothly. But it is possible that you'll plant a church or enter a setup with little of any organisation, very little by way of diaconal support. And in these situations, unfortunately, you really have to start from scratch. So let me just quickly run over some areas to focus on in church administration. And the first is purchases. Who can purchase what? And how is that done? When something's purchased, it should be filled out in an order book and a copy given to the treasurer, together with invoices, receipts. You should designate payees in the cheque and credit card, and also have limits and levels for approval, so that, for example, you might say to your church officer, your janitor, feel free to go and spend up to $50, but anything above that, then bring it to the deacons. So get the purchases organized so that it's not just everyone's spending the money and there's no real accountability. Buildings. You should really have a protocol for your church buildings. Who can use them? How do you book them? What do you charge for them if you're renting them out? How do different groups in the church arrange for the use of buildings? And so on. The third area is the church computer. Most churches will have their own computer, their own office computer, containing membership records, mailing lists. And remember, make sure you're complying with any data protection laws there. You've got people's permission, if that's required, to have computer records about them. Accounting procedures. Probably your church computer will have some kind of financial software on it for keeping a record of income and expenditure and bills. Correspondence. Who's responsible for dealing with or delegating any letters that come into the church? Publications, which do you receive? Who pays for them? Security of your church computer. Make sure you've got passwords, that you've got antivirus and firewall software, especially if you're keeping personal details of people. Do you have a backup? And then, who runs the website, who manages the blog, who deals with the message board if you have one. So purchases, buildings, church computer. Fourthly, library. Most churches have a library. Who decides which books to stock? Who decides lending procedure, opening hours? Then the fifth area is the vestibule, the porch or entrance of the church. Who vets the literature and resources that are there? And who secures the building? Before, during, and after services. So just some things to begin to think about church administration. Again, I'd really hope that that won't be required, but you might have deacons and they need a bit of training in some of these things as well. So what have we looked at? We've looked at the beauty of organization, the benefits of organization, the barriers to organization. We've been looking at the blueprint for organisation, both on a personal and on a church level. I'd like to finish up with the balance of organisation. My father used to say to me, "Show me a clean desk and I'll show you someone who's getting nothing done." There is such a thing as clean desk syndrome, where the aim becomes a clean desk, but little to nothing ever gets done on it. A degree of mess is required for any kind of productivity. Is there not a proverb about that? Where there's no ass, the stall is clean. So, mustn't get obsessional about this. I like to actually think of three stages of organisation. There's day to day. So, every day I'm aiming to have my study about 50% tidy. So, it's not perfect. But neither is it a mess. I'm hoping, it's sort of halfway in between at the end of each working day. But then from week to week, I'm aiming for, say, a 90% tidy. In other words, once a week, it was usually for me a Saturday evening after I prepared my sermons. I want to tidy up most of what's been left over at the end of each week's working day. And I'm trying to get my office there back to about 90% tidy. It's not going to be perfect. But then I would also aim for a monthly purge, and there I'm aiming for 100% tidy. I want to, once a month, return my office to its pristine condition. And I put a link there at the end of this lecture to a series on biblical productivity that I think you might find helpful. And just in case you think I've got a bad case of obsessive compulsive disorder over this, here's a daily stat email on messy desks from the Harvard Business Review. It said, "A recent study interviewed human resource managers at a number of different companies, asking them how neatness of an employee's desk affects their perception of that person's professionalism. 65% said it somewhat affects it, while 18% said it greatly affects it, with only 17% saying it has no effect. It isn't exactly fair, but it's something to think about when you're staring at your tornado of an office. You may want to tidy it up, if only to improve your reputation with your superiors. Somebody could take this and run with it. A new ministry? Desk evangelism.